Thank you to everyone for coming. Thank you to Talia and the entire Mishpacha. The truth is, Talia, we've been talking about doing a shir for a long time, so it's about time we got together in your family's home. It's a big schus to be here. Thank you for opening your home to Torah learning. The shir should be for Rafua Shalema for Binyamin Zeva Cohen Ben Sharon Rivka, Besoch Shar Chole Yisrael, and Amir Tzashem HaKadosh Baruch Hu should send Yeshua very quickly. Probably one of the most difficult things in life is when a person is promised something and they have to face the disappointment of not seeing the fulfillment of that promise. I can tell you as a parent that when I say to our 3.5-year-old Meira, she says, "Daddy, can you come to my room to read me a book?" "Sure, I'll be there in 1 minute." Right. So what's 1 minute to a child? Well, it depends. If you're talking to a 3.5-year-old, they may not have a concept of 1 minute. 1 minute might be in their mind 1 second. And if you show up literally 1 minute later, you're already considered late. If you're talking to an older child who has some concept of time, so they might understand the concept of 1 minute. But if I walk into Zahava's room after 1 minute and 6 seconds, she says, "Daddy, you said 1 minute and it's been, 66 seconds. So, where have you been? What's going on here?" Right? And when a person anticipates something, when a person's looking forward to something, with an expectation that something's going to arrive at a particular time, and it doesn't arrive, that is often sometimes one of the most frustrating things in the world. Sometimes it's just, again, it's a language barrier. You're talking to someone who's speaking a different language. They don't have the same concept of time. When we talk about time with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, sometimes that's the main issue. We talk differently when we talk about time. The Pasuk in Tehillim says that ki elef shonim be'einecha ki yom etmol, which means that 1,000 years for us is like a day in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world. So sometimes we might feel like we've been waiting a long time for something, and Hashem says it hasn't been that long. The ratio, 1,000 years to 1 day, in your mind it's been a long time, but in Hashem's world it really hasn't been that long. But again, that disconnect can lead to tremendous frustration. And I think we've all experienced that type of heartbreak in the course of our lives, where we were expecting something to happen, we wanted something to happen, we were anticipating something to happen, we waited for something to happen, and a particular time passed, maybe we waited a bit longer, and maybe a bit longer, and the terrible pain of waiting for something and it not arriving can be a very frustrating thing. Chazal were very, very critical of a person who tries to predict when Mashiach is coming. If a person tries to offer a date, the Gemara has very, very sharp, very strong words against the person who says, Mashiach will be arriving by a particular date. And the answer, the reason why Chazal felt that way, is very obvious. It's exactly what we're describing. That when a person's looking forward to something, and you're expecting something to happen, and it doesn't happen, so how does that leave you feeling? Someone promises you, Mashiach's going to arrive by a particular date, and Mashiach doesn't come. So what does that do to the spirit of Klal Yisrael? It leaves us terribly broken and terribly disappointed. It's true in much more simple things in this world. I have neighbors across the street that are doing construction on their house. And so the builder says, by the end of the summer, you'll be back in your house. And then it's October, and it's November, and it's December. And the builder says, well, we need another month. And the whole family is displaced, and school's starting, the kids aren't able to be in school, and they're trying to find a house to rent, and it makes everything so hectic in their lives. And again, that's a minor thing. Baruch Hashem, they have the resources and the growing family to build their home bigger. What about a person who has an injury? A person who's not well, and the doctor says, I had a friend about a year ago, almost a year ago to the day, was involved in a terrible accident, had a terrible leg injury. And it's not exactly his case. The doctor didn't say you'll be back on your feet in 3 months. But there was an anticipation that after a period of time, it's been over a year now, and he's still limping around. So he hoped after 3 months, after 6 months, after a year. Right? And everyone understands, every mature adult understands that things can change. They understand that things come up, but it's terribly frustrating. And all the more so when we talk about Geula, we talk about Mashiach. We talk about the most important thing, whether we realize it or not, that every single one of us is longing for, both on a personal level and a collective Klal Yisrael level. We're looking forward to Mashiach coming, and we're waiting, and we're waiting, and Hashem says, it's coming. And it's not here yet, so where does that leave us? What's the feeling that we're left with at the end of the day? It's a very, very broken-hearted type of feeling. Take a look together at source number one. The Pasuk in Habakkuk tells us, Kadosh Baruch Hu says to the Navi, Ki od chazon lemoed. There's yet another vision for the appointed time, describing some type of moed, at a time that we're all waiting for. It will speak of the end. It will speak of the kates, of the end of time. And it will not deceive. It's going to come. That promise is there. It's going to happen. If it delays, you should wait for him. Because whatever it is, this kates, this moed, this thing that's yet to come, it will come. And lo yacher, it will not delay. It will not tarry. It will happen. Chazal take a look at this pasuk, and they see again the danger of a person who predicts the coming of Mashiach. In source number 2, the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us, "Mai v'yafeach l'keitz v'lo yechaziv." Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yonasan. Look at these strong words: "Tipach atzman shamachash ve'kitzin." Right, the etzem means the essence, or it means the bones. Tipach means it should rot. The bones of a person who's mechashiv the kates, a person who predicts Mashiach, who offers a date for the geula shlema, for the arrival of Mashiach, their bones should rot. Their essence should be destroyed. It's the most destructive thing you can do. Why? Shayu omrim kevan shigiyas the kates v'lo ba, shu veino ba. Because what's the response? What do people say? That date, everyone's looking forward to it. The date comes and it passes. Mashiach's not here. Well, if it didn't come by the date that was predicted, shu veino ba, maybe Mashiach's never going to come. Ella, rather, what should we do, says the Gemara? Chakelo, wait patiently. Like the end of the pasuk said in source number 1. Im yismamea chakelo. If he delays, just hang in there. But don't get obsessed with any particular date. And a person who tries to offer a date, the bones of that person should rot. In Meseches Derech Eretz, which is one of the Mesechtos Ketanos, one of the minor tractates, not part of the regular order of the Gemara, but it's also an authentic part of Torah Shu'al Peh. There's something called Meseches Derech Eretz in source number 3, and you find even sharper lashonos, even stronger language. Rabbi Yossi Omer Hanosein Esakeitz Ein Lo Chelech Biolam Haba. A person who predicts Mashiach's arrival loses their portion in the world to come. Why? Because you know how many Jews, you know how many hearts you crushed, you know how many people's spirits were completely ruined by the fact that you promised something by a certain date that you couldn't deliver. A person who's mechashiv the kates, hanosein asakates, ein lo chelek le'olam haba. And this is in fact the halacha. As the Rambam writes in the fourth source, v'chein lo yechashiv akitzin, amru chachamim, tipach daitan shemachatz v'akitzin, changes the words in the Gemara a little bit, the words that tipach atzman, their essence should be rotten. Tipach daitan means that their minds should spoil, because they're using their minds to lead other people astray. El yechake v'yamin b'chlal hadavar k'mo shevi'arno. Says the Rambam, we should look forward to the coming of Mashiach in a general sense without getting caught up on any particular date for the arrival of Mashiach. It's usur to predict a specific date for the arrival of Mashiach. My friends, what's so strange about this? The Gemara says it's a terrible thing. Meseches Derech Eretz says it's an even worse thing. The Rambam paskins this way. What's so strange about this Gemara, these Mamari Chazal, this Psak of the Rambam? What's strange is that throughout Jewish history, all the Tzaddikei HaDoros predicted dates of Mashiach's arrival. Throughout the generations, whether it was based on a mystical family tradition, whether it's based, and it often was based on a pasuk in the last chapter of Sefer Daniel, Perek Yud Beis pasuk Zion, ki lemoed moedim v'chatzi, a time and times and a half. So throughout the generations, all the tzaddikei doros trying to figure out, what does that mean? If you take a time, plus times, plus a half, right? What is a time? What is two times? What is a half? Different calculations. Again, that last chapter of Sefer Daniel filled with all sorts of predictions of the coming of Mashiach. How ironic that the Rambam himself, the Rambam who we read a moment ago in source number 4, who told us you should not calculate the kates, the Rambam himself in his Igeres Teman writes that I have a family tradition that Mashiach is going to come in the year 1216. You paskin that you're not allowed to predict the coming of Mashiach. And the Gemara makes a lot of sense why you shouldn't predict Mashiach. People are going to be disheartened by it. And yet the Rambam himself speaks about a particular date, a family tradition that he says that goes back many, many generations. That is a tradition in the year 1216, or about the year 1216, Mashiach is going to come. So how do you make sense of these predictions throughout the generations? You have tzaddikim in every generation, for thousands of years, making predictions of Mashiach's arrival. And yet the Gemara is so clear, so not ambiguous about its declaration that it's usur for a person to pin Mashiach onto a particular date. There was a holy Jew named Rav Reuven Margolios. It's not a household name necessarily. He passed away in 1971. He was not blessed with children in the course of his lifetime. He was an unbelievable Talmud Chacham who was totally inconspicuous in his presentation. The last 35 years of his life, he lived in Tel Aviv. He was a librarian in the Rambam Library in Tel Aviv. A Gon Olam, a massive Torah genius, wrote over 60 volumes of Torah commentaries on every topic under the sun. A brilliant, brilliant Torah scholar. And again, not a person who was necessarily well-known in the world at large. He wrote a very famous sefer on Maseches Sanhedrin called Margolios Hayam. And he writes on this Gemara in Sanhedrin that says how terrible it is to predict Mashiach. He says, you just have to follow the Gemara and you get the answer to our question. Why do all the people throughout the generations predict Mashiach if the Gemara says it's such a terrible thing? He says, the Gemara says it's a terrible thing if what? If you say that Mashiach is definitely coming by this date. Because what does the Gemara say? If Mashiach doesn't show up by that date, what happens? Everyone's left frustrated. Everyone abandons their faith. Everyone gives up hope in Mashiach. Right? Everyone's depressed. So says Reuben Margolis, the tzaddikim throughout the generations, they didn't say, definitely Mashiach is coming by that date. Reuben Margolis says that they were offering suggestions based on calculations. But they never said, absolutely Mashiach is coming by a particular date. He's giving us a justification, he's giving us a heter, how it could be that so many righteous people who obviously knew this Gemara were offering predictions. They never meant it to say that this is the definitive date. When the Rambam said in the 1200s, Mashiach's coming, he didn't say, this is the only date. He said, I have a tradition, it's based on certain sources, and this is what we're all hoping for, but I'm not promising anything. And that's how Reuben Margolis answers, again, the question of how people throughout the generation could do such a thing. But I'll show you an even stronger, a stronger limud zchus on what the tzaddikim were trying to do throughout the generations. We're going to quote a lot tonight from the Chos of Lublin, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha. The seer of Lublin, the Chos of Lublin, one of the G'dolei Hasidic Rebbes of all time, someone who was the Rebbe of so many other great tzaddikim who became their own Rebbes and founded their own dynasties. The Chos of Lublin's Yartzeit on Tisha B'Av is someone we think about a lot this time of the year. There's a volume called the Avnei Zikaron in source number 5. And it's a collection of teachings from the Chos of Lublin. Look what the Chos of Lublin says. Why are the tzaddikim throughout the generations predicting Mashiach's arrival? He says such a beautiful thing. HaRebi mi Lublin zatzal amar. Al machash ve'kitin shal Mashiach zidkenu b'mher b'yameinu. Ki al pi halacha b'im ben roe la'av she'inu osa chalila kayos. What's the halacha if a child sees a parent who's doing something that's against the Torah? A child can't say it to one's mother, to one's father. You can't say, that's usur, that's terrible, you can't do it. A child can't rebuke a parent. There's a basic expectation of kibud avim, of respecting one's parents. And at the same time, a parent is also bound by the laws of the Torah. So how does a child inform a parent that they're not doing something in the best possible way? It says the Chos of Lublin, it's a halacha, it's a clear halacha. The son can't say to his father that, dad, you're not doing the right thing. The son should very cleverly, very respectfully and thoughtfully sit down with his father and say, you know, dad, there's a section of Hilchos Shabbos I've been wanting to learn for a while. And they start to learn together. And all of a sudden they stumble across halacha and, that's so interesting. In our family, we never did that. Oh, now we learned it together. Now the son knew it, and he knew that his father or mother was not performing that properly. Or the daughter understood that a family member wasn't doing that properly. And yet, out of a sensitivity, the Gemara says, the halacha is clear in the laws of kibud avim. You can't say outright, you're doing the wrong thing. You have to delicately point out, oh look, there happens to be a pasuk in the Chumash that says that the expectation of God is X, Y, or Z. In a very, very delicate and sensitive way. Says the Chos of Lublin in source number 5 where it's bolded. The cave in Sha'anu Rotsim, Lachavas Da'atinu Lavinu Shua Shema. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the father of every single one of us. And we would all like to point out to our father, these are very strong words, listen carefully, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we feel that you're doing something wrong. What has God done that's wrong? What are we upset about with our Father in heaven? She'arachim al-bana v'yigal osam b'karov. We say, Hashem, it's really not right that you've left us in Gullis for so long. And how many more times are Jews going to have to suffer? How much more anti-Semitism are we going to have to face? How many more scary Irans are going to come and go before Hashem is going to bring us to the Gula Shlema already? And therefore, what did the tzaddikim throughout the generations do? They didn't come directly to God and say, Hashem, you've done a terrible injustice, you must bring Mashiach. But they very gently hinted to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, our Father in Heaven, that maybe, Hashem, maybe you're not fulfilling a promise you made once upon a time. L'chein tzaddiki adoros. Mechad shem eze keitz Mashiach. The tzaddikim look in the Torah. They sit down with their Father in heaven. They sit down with the Kadosh Baruch Hu for a chavrusa to learn a little. They find the source in the Torah that indicates that maybe Mashiach should come by a particular date. They attach it to a hint in a pasuk. To delicately hint, to gently hint to our Father in heaven. Abba, kach kosu b'Torah. This is what it says in your book. What a beautiful pshat from the Chose of Lublin. That we hint, that tzaddikim throughout the generations, we're hinting to our Father in heaven. Hashem, you know what? Maybe it's a little too much already. Maybe we've suffered enough. Maybe we've heard too many tragic things. And it's time for the Geula Shleima. It's a beautiful, beautiful idea. But my friends, I think we're all left with the same feeling. That's very nice, but it hasn't worked. And our Father hasn't responded. And we're feeling very frustrated about that. So it's a nice justification for why it's not usur for the tzaddikim to offer these calculations and these predictions. But at the end of the day, the Jewish people are still suffering. And we haven't gotten what we want, what we're longing for. And again, when we don't get what we're looking forward to, at some point, if that hope doesn't turn into reality, so the Klal Yisrael are going to be destroyed by that longing, by that unfulfilled desire. How many people here have read Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning, by show of hands? Okay, so everyone else has a little bit of homework to do. It's a very important book. Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning, from 1946, when he first published it. It's a bestseller in who knows how many languages. Viktor Frankl describes his experience in Auschwitz, and what it was like being in that hell on earth. And one of the beautiful things that he developed is that it's possible for a person to find meaning in any experience. Even in the worst suffering, and God forbid, even in the moments before death. That as long as you're alive, life inherently has purpose. It's a very challenging thing, obviously, for a person, but someone who went through what he went through was able to develop such an idea. And he shares in his book a really remarkable thing. Again, one of the theories he develops is that when a person loses hope, that's when it's all over. As long as you believe that your situation can get better, so then a person can live off of that hope. But at some point, the hope runs out. And if the hope runs out, you're doomed. It's over. He writes on page 97. Take a look. You have the quote. You have the quote in front of you. He tells the following story. Let me give you the background to the story. He says this was in February of 1945. And one of his friends was a well-known composer before the war. He was a person who wrote operas. A well-known personality. A distinguished person who was stuck in that hell on earth, again, alongside Viktor Frankl. In February 1945, he told him, I had a very vivid dream. And in my dream, a voice told me that on March 30th, Bidiuk, precisely on March 30th, we are going to get out of here. We're going to be saved. And this person lived with such hope, waiting for that date, March 30th. And he says an amazing thing, a very tragic and amazing thing happened. He said, as that date got closer and closer, he saw his friends started to lose it. Because he saw there were no signs of an imminent redemption. He said on March 29th, his friend came down with a terribly high fever. By March 30th, the predicted date, he was completely unconscious. And on March 31st, the person passed away. What did he die from? So he'll say, typhus. He died from typhus. It was clear that he died from typhus. Says Viktor Frankl in source number 6. To those who know how close the connection is between the state of mind of a man, his courage and hope or lack of them, and the state of immunity of his body will understand that the sudden loss of hope and courage can have a deadly effect. When the promise is unfulfilled, a person can die from that. The ultimate cause of my friend's death was that the expected liberation did not come, and he was severely disappointed. This suddenly lowered his body's resistance against the latent typhus infection. There was typhus was rampant in the camp. And yet because he believed that he could be saved, it didn't affect him. His body was willing to fight off the disease. His faith in the future and his will to live had become paralyzed, and his body fell victim to illness. And thus the voice of his dream was right after all. He was, unfortunately, in a tragic way, he was liberated on March 30th. And when he fell unconscious and he passed away. But again, Viktor Frankl says, when a person's living on hope, at some point, there's a part of us that just wants to give up. There's a frustration, and this is exactly, again, what Chazal were so afraid of. If you predict dates for Mashiach, it could leave a person, God forbid, with that feeling, another year without Geula, another year without Geula. How many more times do I have to watch Chofetz Chaim heritage videos on Tisha B'Av until someone tells the truth? Right? Every year, this is going to be the year, and this is going to be the year, and this is going to be the year. And I can pull out the tapes from all the years, and I can watch them all. So when is it actually going to happen? 1860 was a big year that they talked about. In 1860, there was a lot of noise throughout the Torah world. Based on a source in the Zohar, the Mashiach's coming in the year 1860. Everyone was very excited, a lot of hope. A lot of inspiration. People were looking forward to the imminent arrival of the Mashiach. There was a big tzaddik, the Jikover. The Jikover was the son of Naftali Rapshitzer. And while everyone was talking, Mashiach is definitely coming 1860, he got out and he made it known that I hold the Mashiach is not coming in the year 1860. He was the one who took us in. Against all the other tzaddik, everyone says, no, based on the Zohar, 1860 is it. He said, it's definitely not coming. 1860, not a chance. Why did he do that? He also believed. He saw the sources in the Zohar. He read the Svarim HaKadoshim. Why was the Jikover? Why was Rav Eliezer Horowitz of Jikov? Why was he so convinced that Mashiach's not coming in 1860? He thought it was coming in 1860. Here's what I found in you quote a source. Mishnah says, if you quote something, Mishem Omra, if you quote a source from where you first saw it, so it brings the Gula to the world. So even though I'm going to quote from a strange source, but it brings, hopefully brings Mashiach a step closer. I saw this in an English volume called the Encyclopedia of Hasidism, in source number 7. Under the entry for Eliezer Horowitz of Jikov, many people believe that the Messiah would come in 1860, a belief based on a reference in the Zohar. In 1860, during the Festival of Tabernacles, which is Sukkot, Rabbi Eliezer publicly affirmed that Mashiach would not come. What's the pshat? A tzaddik gets up and says Mashiach is definitely not coming. Why would he say such a thing? Later he explained the motive for his negative statement. Better that people should lose faith in me and accuse me of telling lies than that they should lose faith in the Messiah. What was the Jikover doing? What he was saying was, what's going to happen if everyone says Mashiach is coming in 1860 and Mashiach doesn't come in 1860? Where does that leave Klal Yisrael? So he said, I'll be the one to take a risk. I'll be the one that if Mashiach doesn't come, people could say, well, not everyone said he's coming in 1860. And halavai, if Mashiach does come, so they'll say the Jikover is he's a fool. He's not a real tzaddik. He's not a real rebbe. He said, I'd rather be a fool than have Klal Yisrael lose hope in the coming of Mashiach. He was willing to do that because he understood how deadly it could be, how spiritually deadly it could be for Klal Yisrael for another date to pass. And again, Mashiach not to come. So what do we make of all these dates that were predicted? So the tzaddikim were wrong. These were the greatest tzaddikim throughout history. All these dates, 1860, 1913, 1941, these were big dates in the world. Big things happened. 1913 was right around World War I, 1941, World War II. There's no question that at the dates that were predicted, big things were happening in the world. So what are we to make of all these predictions that were unfulfilled? So if you look in source number 8 in the Bnei Yisrael, he gives us something which maybe gives us a little bit of chizuk. He's talking about Amunah. And he's talking about the importance of Amunah Pshuta. That we believe in God with simple faith. It doesn't mean we can't try to understand God intellectually and rationally. But there has to be a part of every Jew that believes in God simply because I believe in a Kodesh Baruch. And it's part of my spiritual DNA. The Bnei Yisrael writes, "Uva amuna alazu mechuyavim anachnu lahalim gam benidon arichos hagolas hachel hazeh." We also need to have amuna that, despite the lengthening of the golas, we believe animam b'emuna shleima that Mashiach is going to come. And even though I've been disappointed time and time again, and he writes where it's bolded, "V'kvar avru idon v'idonim v'anachnu lo noshanu." The times have come and gone, and we're still not redeemed. So many tzaddikim predicted dates. Right? All sorts of holy people who were trustworthy people. When it's all passed. Your mind is so unsettled by all of this. Listen to what the Bnei Yisrael says. It's a very challenging idea. He says a Jew has to believe in God to such a degree, like the Navi Yeshaya says, "Lo machshav osai machshav osechem." The way that Hashem thinks is so radically different than the way that we think, that even if it's a logical impossibility, I have to believe it. Which means what? Which means that when a tzaddik said Mashiach is coming in 1860, he was correct. But we're in the year Tavshin Ayin Aleph, Ayin Hay, right? We're in the year 2015. So what do you mean he was correct in 1860? How is it possible that Mashiach is coming in 1860 if that date has come and gone? The Bnei Yisrael says, believe in Hashem that He's going to work that out. What does it mean to work that out? How can I believe in two things which are polar opposites? She'ena soichol yachol l'chayiv. My mind says, it can't be. Al-kein m'chuyav menachnu l'hamin b'bias m'shichinu b'meher b'yaminu. We need to believe. Be'amun ha-shleima. Gam m'chuyav menachnu l'hamin b'divrei ha-navim. V'achacham asher kosru kitzim beruach kodcho. Hagam shekvar avro. You need to believe in those dates that passed, that they were correct. What does that mean? What does that mean? So what he's basically saying is that on a spiritual level, something was happening in the world. And the world entered a more redeemed state. We weren't fully there. So we got World War I, and we got World War II, and we got the Industrial Revolution, and we got all sorts of worldly upheaval in place of Mashiach that was supposed to come. So that's very nice. That's very nice to know that the tzaddikim who are guiding us are true tzaddikim, and their words are true. But how does that, and that does what for us? So 1860 in Pnimius, in an inner way, was a time of redemption. That's very nice. And 1913 was a time of redemption. And 1941 was a time of redemption. And on a spiritual level, all those things are true. In 1990, there was a lot of talk about redemption. I spent my year in Israel in the year 2000, Tafshin Samach. There were Svarim being written, Tafshin Samach, based on one of the sources, was a big year for Geula. That's very nice. The B'nai said, it's true, yes, you have to believe that whatever was said about the year 2000 was absolutely true. And therefore what? And so now everything's great? Now all my problems are solved? Now the Jewish people have nothing to worry about? We're there simply because on a spiritual level something took place in the year 2000? It's a beautiful thing that the B'nai HaSasra is trying to tell us, but it doesn't quite get us there. The Malbim was one of the people who predicted the year 1913. The Malbim, Rav Meir Leibish ben Yechiel Michel, one of the great commentaries on Tanakh, one of the great fighters for orthodoxy against those movements that were trying to uproot Yiddishkeit, the Malbim predicted that the year 1913 would be the year Mashiach comes. World War I began on July 28, 1914. So someone once asked the Malbim, how can you predict that Mashiach's coming in the year 1913? Don't you know the Gemara says that it's usher to predict specific dates? So the Malbim gave a beautiful mashal. You know what he said? The Malbim said, it's like, imagine a father sets out on a business trip with his son, in the olden days, when he actually took time to get places. And they're traveling, let's say, by caravan. And it's going to be a month to get to where they're getting to. And the father turns to his young son and says, do you want to come on the trip? Or you think you're old enough to handle the trip? Yeah, Dad, I'm ready for the trip. They set out on the trip. And 15 minutes into the trip, the son turns to the driver and says, excuse me, sir, are we getting close? So the father starts screaming at the child. We're a few minutes into the trip. I told you it's a long trip. Sit down, relax yourself. We're going to be on the road for many days. On the 30th day, as we're getting closer to the destination, the father turns to the driver and asks the same question. He says to the driver, are we getting close? So the son says, oh, so now you're allowed to ask that question? I asked the exact same question you screamed at me. You ask that question and you think it's appropriate? So the father says, don't you understand? You asked that question 10 minutes into the trip. It's ridiculous to start talking, are we there yet, 10 minutes into the trip. I'm asking, after traveling all this way, it's time to start talking about it. So says the Malbim. The Malbim passed away in the late 1800s. When he predicted the year 1913, he said, we've been on the road for a long time. It's time to start asking, when is the trip coming to an end? That was the mashal the Malbim gave to explain his basis for predictions. Again, it's a beautiful mashal, but the Malbim said Mashiach is coming 100 years ago, and we're still here, and there's still no Mashiach. So it's a nice idea, but does it really make us feel better? During the Holocaust, when the Brisker Rav said that everything that's happening in the Holocaust, I guarantee that within 70 years from now, Mashiach will be here. No. So now what? 70 years has come and gone. Or maybe we're waiting like the Zohar says. The Zohar writes in source number 9 that when Mashiach gets close, Chad Yekar Yevul Yom Mashiach, Afilu Rav Yeda Alma Zimnin La'ashkecha Tumirin Dechachmasa. That little children, when Mashiach gets close, you can ask the little kid in the street when Mashiach's coming, and he'll tell you when Mashiach's coming. So stop a little Jewish kid in the street and say, when's Mashiach coming? Little kid will say, what do you mean? Everyone knows Mashiach's coming very soon. So that's very sweet. When my daughter comes home from school and she says, Daddy, Mora told me that Mashiach's coming soon. So I say, wow, that's so beautiful. And those are some of the sweetest moments that I share with my children. Right? But there's a part of me that rolls my eyes and says, and my Rebbe told me the same thing. And my parents probably heard the same thing from their teachers, and grandparents heard the same thing from their teachers. So at what point, Rachmana Litzlan, do we end up like that friend of Viktor Frankl? At what point do we throw in the towel and say, we're tired of waiting, and it's just simply not happening? At what point do we say, it's simply too much? So I want to try to give us a perspective. For the last part of this year, I want to try to give us a perspective on how we can stay positive about Mashiach coming. How we can live lives where we see the cup as half full and not half empty. And not to be frustrated by the promise and the promise and the promise and the promise and the unfulfilled promise and another Tisha B'Av and another Tisha B'Av and another Tisha B'Av. I want to try to look at it in a totally different way. There's a beautiful medrash. It's based on a pasuk we read a few weeks ago. Let's jump ahead to source number 12. Bilam HaRasha, one of the most deceitful individuals in the entirety of the Torah, he's forced to bless Klal Yisrael. And what does Bilam say in his prophecy about the end of days? Er'enu v'lo'at. Erenu, it's true, you'll get to see it, v'lo ata, but not now. Ashurenu, v'lo karuv. You'll perceive it, but it's not so close. Darach kocham Yaakov, a star will rise from Yaakov, a kam shevet miYisrael, and you'll destroy all the enemies of the Jewish people. Bilam Marasha says, something's going to happen, a shooting star from amongst the Jewish people, but not quite yet. Says the Medrash Yalkut Shimoni on Balak in Source 13, Erenu v'lo ata. We have to decide what type of attitude we want to have. Take a look at this medrash; it's mind-blowing. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Moshe Amar ki karov yom edom. What was the language of Moshe Rabbeinu? Throughout the Torah, Moshe is always talking the language of karov. It's so close. Ki karov alecha dav ma'od. Tshuva is so close. Torah is so close. The downfall of the enemies of the Jewish people is so close. That was the language of Moshe Rabbeinu. What was the language of Bilam HaRasha? How did Bilam HaRasha see the glass? Half empty or half full? Bilam says, Erenu, yes, maybe at some future point, it'll happen. V'lo ata, but not now. I don't think it's going to happen in your lifetime. Mashal lemelech shenasan medinu lebeno b'makom rachuk. Imagine a king who gives his son the prince a property of land, a territory in a distant area. Vayu oavo v'oivo holchinimo. And this prince is traveling alongside. It's a mashal, so doesn't have to fit with reality. He brings along his best friend and he brings along his biggest enemy to travel with him. Kishmahalch and Bederach, as they're traveling to this distant kingdom, Amrlo Oivo, his enemy, says to him, Lefish Sonecha Avicha Nasan Lacha Medina B'makom Rachuk. Look how much your father hates your guts. Because if he loved you, why would he try to set you up? Why would he build you a beautiful place, a beautiful palace, so many miles away from the center of his kingdom? He must really not like you. Katsura Daito Shal Ben HaMelech. And the prince was depressed. Oh, Avo Omer Lo. The prince's trusted friend turns to him, his beloved turns to him, and he says, no. Achshav Anu Megin Eitz Medina. Now we're finally getting close, we're about to arrive. And you're going to see that all of that anticipation, all of that waiting, all of that traveling, Metakhtam Anu Kol Ma'adonim. Wait till you see the party that they have waiting to greet you. Miyad Niskara Daito Shal Ben HaMelech. All of a sudden the prince had a big smile on his face. He felt so much better. V'chein Yeshaya Amar. And so to Yeshaya the Navi said, Ki Karov Yom Hashem. The day of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's revelation is so close. What's the machlokas between Moshe and Bilam? What's the machlokas between Yeshaya and Navi and Bilam? What's the machlokas between the Torah and Bilam? What's the machlokas between Hashem Himself and Bilam? It's all a question of your perspective. Do I want to spend my life being embittered by everything that has yet to happen, that has not happened? Do I want to focus on all the times that I was hopeful for something to take place in my life, personal, communal, national, and focus on that? And live a life of frustration? Or do I want to take the Moshe Rabbeinu attitude and say, Kikarov, 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 it's so close, it's so close, it's so close. There's a beautiful story of the Chos of Lublin. I told you, it's Yartzeit on Tisha B'Av. This story, I think, encapsulates the whole year. If you remember one thing, take this story with you for the rest of your life. The Chos of Lublin passed away, and one of his children was assigned as Yerusha. He was put in charge of all of his possessions. He had a son named Rav Yosef of Turchin, Rav Yosela Turchina. Rav Yosela was traveling back to Turchin. He had with him many of the possessions of the Chos of Lublin. And as he was traveling, he stayed over one night at a particular inn. His intention was to continue traveling the next morning. There was a terrible storm, there was terrible weather. He got stuck in the inn for a period of time. And he simply didn't have enough cash, he didn't have money to pay the bill. So he told the innkeeper, listen, I'm going to give you something from my father's possessions. The innkeeper said, okay, I'm sure we can work something out. And he gave him a clock that had belonged to his father. Years later, in that very same inn, there was another tzaddik who was passing by. The Chos of Lublin had a Talmud who was known as the Sabbat Kedisha of Radishitz, Rav Yisachar Dov Ber of Radishitz. At that point, he himself had become a Rebbe, and he was traveling, and he comes to that particular inn, and the innkeeper welcomes them in, and he gives the Rebbe the nicest room, and the Hasidim fill in all the other rooms, and everyone's settling down for the night. And the innkeeper, he hears the Rebbe of Radishitz, he's walking back and forth in his room. His room was right on top of the innkeeper's. And he's pacing back and forth, he's some Rebbe thing, he's saying some tefillos before he goes to sleep, the hour is getting late, and he's going back and forth, and he's going back and forth. And 15 minutes go by, half hour goes by, an hour goes by, it's 1 in the morning, it's 2 in the morning, it's 3 in the morning. And the Rebbe's, the Sabbat Kedisha of Radishitz is pacing back and forth, and back and forth, and back and forth. The whole night, literally the whole night, he's pacing around in his room. The next morning, the innkeeper comes upstairs, he knocks on the door. He said, Rebbe, you didn't sleep at all last night. I heard you. The floor was squeaking. I heard you the entire night, pacing back and forth. I heard you walking around the room. What was going on? So the Rebbe says to him, he says, I would like to know what's going on. He says, that clock in the room, where did you get that clock? So he says, there was some holy Jew years ago, he traveled through, and he said that his father had passed away, and he got stuck here, he couldn't pay, he left me this clock to pay his bills. So he says, tell me, what did he look like? And he starts describing Rav Yossel Terchiner. And he says, I knew it. He says, I knew that was the Chose of Lublin's clock. So the innkeeper says, how did you know? He says, a clock, by definition, is a sad instrument. A clock is something that could lead a person to depression. Why? Because every time the clock ticks, every time the clock, if it's a, you know, a grandfather clock, every time it rings, every time it chimes, what's it signaling? The very nature of a clock is that it signals that another hour of your life has passed you by. Another opportunity was lost. Another moment that can never be retrieved. He said, when I used to visit the Chose of Lublin, I was always captivated by his clock. His clock had a different tick to it, had a different ring to it. By the Chose of Lublin, every time the clock chimed, every time the clock ticked, it was signaling that we're 1 hour closer to Mashiach, or 1 minute closer to Mashiach. He says, could you sleep in a room with such a clock? Do you think you could fall asleep in a room where there's a clock that's telling you every second Mashiach, another second closer? That's the difference between the Bilam approach and the Moshe Rabbeinu approach. Do you see another minute, another year of disappointment, not Mashiach, not redemption, more Jewish difficulties, more suffering, more tzaras for Klal Yisrael? Or do you have the attitude of the Chose of Lublin's clock? After years and decades and centuries of disappointment, do you say, you know what? It's another year closer. It's another hour closer. It's another second of my life closer. That's a choice that we have to make. And it's these days, more than any other time in the calendar year, that we have to make that choice. What was the pasuk from Bilam that we quoted a little bit ago? Erenu v'lo ata. You'll see it at some point. Asherenu v'lo karov. Darach kochav miyakov. What's this kochav miyakov? What's this star, this mysterious star that's going to come from Yaakov? The Medrash Tanchum in Source 14 tells us, Darach kochav miyakov zeh melech ha-mashiach. Mashiach is compared to a shooting star. Why is Mashiach compared to a star? Why are the Jewish people compared to stars? Why did Hashem say to Avram in the next source, in Source 15, V'yotzei oso achutza, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took Avram outside, and he said, your children are going to be like the stars. In what way is a Jew like a star? Go count the stars if you're able to count them, Avram. Your children are going to be like the stars. What's the nature of a star? What's a star? Well, it depends on your attitude. It depends on your perspective. You can look up on a starry night, you can say there's trillions of stars, and they're all essentially unidentifiable. It's a little speck, a little glimmer of light, of hope, somewhere in the distance. Right? It's really, it doesn't relate to me in any type of way. It doesn't show any depth, any breadth. And yet at the same time, if you were to actually get a little bit closer to the star, if you would understand what the star really was, it's a massive ball, a beautiful, brilliant, illuminated ball of gas. It's a massive thing. And it's not at all unidentifiable. It has a very precise dimensions to it. Says the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, it's quoted in a sefer called Beis Yisrael in Source 16. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Avram, Kemo she'akochavim nirim lamata kiketanim ulamala b'shamayim him gedolim ma'od. Just like a star, it depends on your perspective. If you take an attitude of being far from the star, if you're physically far from a star, it looks like a tiny, insignificant speck in the sky. But if you were to get close to the star, you would see how awesome, in fact, it is. Kein b'nei Yisrael, nirim ketanim lamata b'olam hazeh. So too the Jewish people. Sometimes we look like that small star in this world. From a distant perspective, distant from a spiritual perspective, Klal Yisrael don't look to be so great. We don't seem to have it so great. Uva'olam e'elyon. But if you have a spiritual perspective, if you have the Moshe Rabbeinu perspective, if you get close to the star, kikar v'alecha davar ma'od, what do you see? Heim gedolim l'ma'od. It's mamish huge. And that's how Mashiach is compared to a star. Because Mashiach is only as good as your perspective towards Mashiach. If you have the right attitude towards Mashiach, then it's very karov. But if you're going to be embittered about it, and you're going to focus on all the disappointment, then Mashiach is going to be a big disappointment to you. In 1930, Rav Schwab, who was a young man, Rav Shimon Schwab, Zatzal, spent the Shabbos by the Chafetz Chaim. And it was a very famous Shabbos. He wrote about it throughout his writings. He spoke about it many times. It was a very intense thing. The Chafetz Chaim was 3 years before the end of his life. He was in his 90s. Rav Schwab was a young man at the time. Imagine a Shabbos in the home of the Chafetz Chaim. And at one point over the course of the Shabbos, the Chafetz Chaim asked the guests, the topic of the man came up. The heavenly manna. They started talking about the man. Everyone knows that the man could taste like whatever you wanted it to taste like. It depended on your machshava. Whatever you thought when you ate the man, that's what the man tasted like. A magnificently spiritual, remarkably spiritual food. So the Chofetz Chaim asked people gathered at the table, or Schwab was amongst them, what would happen if you ate the man and you didn't have any kavanah? You didn't think, I want it to taste like, you know, your favorite roll of sushi, or your favorite sandwich, or your favorite drink from wherever. Right? What would happen if you didn't have kavanah and you just ate the man? You didn't picture some delicacy, some food that you particularly enjoyed. And Rav Schwab says, everyone sat quiet. Everyone was too scared to answer the Chofetz Chaim. So the Chofetz Chaim said, I'll tell you. It's verse 17. Mayan Beis HaShoyah from Rav Schwab, where he records this maisa. He says where it's bolded. Oz Amar, ani agid lachem, oz mitrach nisht hotes kentam nisht. Let's read a little translation. B'li machshava ein lo shum tam. If you don't think about it, if you didn't put your mind to the man, then the man tasted like nothing. See, we would have guessed otherwise. We would have said the default setting on the man is the way the Torah describes it. It's like a honey wafer, it's like some type of, you know, cinnabon or something like that, sweetened in honey, right? Says the Chofetz Chaim, no. The man was a spiritual food. If you thought about it, it took on a flavor, it took on a taste. If you didn't think about it, it tasted like nothing. Because spiritual things are only as good as the mindfulness that you put into it. Says the Chofetz Chaim, V'chein yiyeh b'biyas ha-Mashiach, im yitein daito liras es galus malchus Hashem, yargish tam matuk she'ein kamo. If you think about Mashiach with a positive attitude, if Mashiach is a sweet idea for you, if it's something that you're really looking forward to in a pleasant and beautiful and sweet way, it will be a sweet experience for you. Aval im lo yitein daito al zeh. But if you don't stop to think about Mashiach, az tova ge'ula, God forbid ge'ula could come, the world could enter a redeemed state, v'hu lo yargish klum, and you will experience nothing. You're not going to understand what everyone's so excited about. Mashiach will be here and you won't have a clue what's happening. What's worse than what the Chofetz Chaim is describing? God forbid having the Bilam approach. Not having the sweet approach to Mashiach. Not even having the neutral approach to Mashiach. God forbid having a negative approach to Mashiach. Being so frustrated, so angry at Hashem, that He's promised us for so long that Mashiach is going to come, and it hasn't come. That you're going to greet Mashiach with a bitter taste in your mouth, and you know what the Chofetz Chaim would tell you? That Mashiach is going to be a bitter experience for you. And yes, it's hard. And yes, we're frustrated. And yes, we've been doing this for a long time. But we have to come to Tisha B'Av with the belief that even though they promised me in the Chofetz Chaim Heritage video last year that Mashiach is going to come, and we're still here, and we're not in Eretz Yisrael, Mashiach is not here, and the world's getting crazier by the minute, we have to believe, Animam B'Muna Shalema, that this year it's going to happen. The root of all Gaulus and Geula is Mitzrayim. When the Jews were getting out of Mitzrayim, and Moshe Rabbeinu was selected, and Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't even believe himself that he was being selected for the task, and he comes to Bnei Yisrael, and Bnei Yisrael, Moshe says, what should I tell them? Who should I say sent me? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe in Shmos Paragimel, source 18, tell the Jewish people, Vayomer Elokim al Moshe, Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh. Tell them, Eke Asher Eke. Eheyeh literally means I will be. It's a name of God though. Just like Yud Kei Vav Kei is the name of God, Aleph Hei Yud Hei is the name of God. Eke Asher Eke. Literally it means, Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh. I will be what I will be. Vayomer Kosamar Levnei Yisrael, Eheyeh Shalachani Aleichem. What is that name, Eke Asher Eke? It's a strange name of God. It means, I will be what I will be. Says the Netziv of Elazim, in his parish, the Hamak Davar, Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh, Ein Ha'ofen Bar Keis. You know what Moshe said back? You know what Hashem said back to Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe asked, how should I introduce the Jewish people to God? What should their introduction to spirituality be? And Hashem says, why are you asking me? Ein ha'ofen bar keis. It's not yet clarified. Mishum shezeh taloi ba'achonas ha'makablim. Because it depends on what the people want me to be. The privilege of being a Jew could be the greatest privilege in the world, or it could be the thing that's the most frustrating thing in our lives. And I'm sure we've all felt, we've had days where we felt both. And I'm sure we all know people who are the living embodiment of both. Jews who, you look at them and you say, wow, they understand what a privilege it is to be a Jew. And you see other people who are so uncomfortable with their Yiddishkeit, that they feel so burdened by it, they feel so uncomfortable by it. Eheyeh asher eheyeh means, I'll be what you make of me. You decide if it's a privilege or if it's a punishment. You decide if Mashiach is close, if God is near, or if God is a distant, evil king. Hashem says a remarkable thing. I will be whatever Klai Yisrael want me to be. If Klai Yisrael want me to be close, then I will be close. And if Klai Yisrael push me away, then I will be far away. And my friends, this pasuk, this introduction to God, Hayah, Asher Hayah, is the biggest klal in your entire life. This is everything. You decide. The attitude you bring to any experience, to any situation in your life, is rooted in this pasuk. What do you want it to be for everything you encounter? Are you going to be frustrated? Or are you going to be like the Chozov Lublin's clock? That, you know what, it didn't work out the way I wanted, but I'm one step closer to what I actually wanted. For those of us who are not yet married, right, and dating can sometimes be a frustrating process. So one of the most annoying things in the world is when what? When your mother, your grandmother, your aunt, like after a really bad date, says, well, now you're one day closer to finding your shidduch. And you're feeling like, you know, shut up. That's really, not interested in hearing that. Right? The worst thing, of course, would be if it's your younger sister who's already married. That would be like the worst of all. But it's true. And it might be painful. And in that moment, you might be very frustrated that this process has been dragging on. You go for a job interview. And you're excited. You think it's the perfect job. It's exactly what you've been waiting for. You spend years of schooling trying to get to a certain place. And you're rejected. And you feel frustrated. And you could harbor and you could focus on that frustration. Or you could close your eyes for a second. You could hear the ring of the Chozov Lublin's clock. And say, you know what? I'm one step closer. I'm one second closer to getting what I actually want. The Chofetz Chaim explained. When the Gemara says that a person is asked six questions when they leave this world. One of the questions that a person is asked, Tzipisa LiYoshua. Did you look forward to the coming of the redemption? The Chofetz Chaim said an amazing thing. You would think just the opposite. The Chofetz Chaim said, it's not only talking about the big picture. A person is going to be asked, when he comes before Hashem after 120, did you look forward, Tzipisa LiYoshua, did you look forward to the personal salvation that you were looking for in your own life? Or did you give up on God? Did you get frustrated to the point where you said, you know what, it's just... Apparently God can't pull this off. Hayah Asher Hayah. You decide what you want it to be. Tzipisa LiYoshua, says the Chofetz Chaim, you're going to be asked, were you patient with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in awaiting and believing that Hashem has His master plan? And at some point, it's all going to click into place and it's all going to make sense. And I think this is really the secret of Shabbos Nachmo. I know we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. We're not even at Tisha B'Av yet. But if you think about Shabbos Nachmo, I was thinking last year, it doesn't make any sense. What's Shabbos Nachmo? So you go through Tisha B'Av, right? And now Tisha B'Av's over, and we all feel relieved because we can take a nice hot shower now, and we can put on, you know, our favorite music, right? And we can get back to the things that we want to do. We're no longer burdened by the weight of the Chorban Beis Hamikdash, and it's Shabbos Nachmo, and people are going away for Shabbos and our concerts, and it's a big celebration. And all of a sudden, it dawned upon me last year: what is Shabbos Nachmo? What's the Nachama? What changed? What happened? We went through a Tisha B'Av. And Mashiach didn't come, and everything is still the way it was right before Tisha B'Av. So what's the Nachama? What's the good feeling that comes after Tisha B'Av? What is Shabbos Nachmo? It's a very obvious question. I don't know why I never thought about it before. But I think the answer is the Chozov Lublin's clock. What are we celebrating after Tisha B'Av? What are we so happy about? What's the Nachama after Tisha B'Av? You know what the Nachama is? We're one Tisha B'Av closer to Mashiach. We're one Tisha B'Av. And hopefully, you know what? Hopefully that was the last Tisha B'Av. That was the last Tisha B'Av of our life. What does it mean to have a good Tisha B'Av? You know what it means to have a good Tisha B'Av? You can say such a thing. Rav Moshe Mordechai of Lulav, the Lulav Rebbe. One time he was standing by the Kotel at the end of Tisha B'Av, and he met the Biala Rebbe, the Chalkus Yoshua. And he says to the Biala Rebbe, he says, let me ask you something. He says, how was your Tisha B'Av? How was your fast? So he says, the fast, it was very good by me. He says, Lulav Rebbe, how was it by you? And Lulav Rebbe said, my fast was great. It was a great fast this year. He says, why? He says, because throughout the entire day of Tisha B'Av, I was hoping for every second that Mashiach would come. That's what it means to have a good Tisha B'Av. Not to sit there wallowing in our sorrow. And of course, we feel the brokenness of the Chorban. But to somehow say, you know what? Even though Hashem, you let me down last year, and you let me down the year before, and you let me down the year before that, but you know what? I really believe that this is going to be it. And the Shabbos Nachmo is, you know what? This was the last thing. That's it. We're done. We're never going to have to do this again. And to believe that, ani ma'amin be'emuna shleima, to really, really believe that. My wife always yells at me that I don't give any practical advice in my shiur. So I'm going to give you very practical advice. Something I started only a couple years ago. And I know you're going to like it. When Tisha B'Av is over this year, if it comes, Halavai, it shouldn't come. If Tisha B'Av comes, you can say it louder. If Tisha B'Av comes this year, and we go through another Tisha B'Av, at the end of Tisha B'Av, if you have a nice art scroll kinos, you know what you should do? You should open up the inside cover to the front cover, and you should write on the inside cover, used for the last time in the year Tav Shinayin. I did that a couple years ago, and I did it last year, and I'm going to do it again this year if I have to. And I'll continue to do it. And I don't care if the front cover fills up, because I'm going to believe every year, if we have to wait a little bit longer, I'm going to refocus myself, like the Chose of Lublin's clock, to really believe that there's a possibility that this could really happen. It's like the famous story of the Rebbe Reb Zusha. The Rebbe Reb Zusha every year around Elul, when the feelings of tshuva would start to come up, the Rebbe Reb Zusha would say, he always spoke about himself by calling himself Zusha. He said, "Zusha, when are you going to do tshuva already?" He says, "You know what, Zusha, today you're going to do tshuva." "Ah, but Hashem's going to say, but Zusha, you told me yesterday you're going to do tshuva. And you told me the day before that Zusha's really going to do tshuva." So he said, "Yeah, but today Zusha's really going to do tshuva. We said last year there's going to be gula. We said the year before there's going to be gula. We've been saying for 2,000 years there's going to be gula. But like the Rebbe of Zusha, but now maybe we're really going to do it. And while we can't promise it, we can't predict it, we can't say for sure, but a little bit we have to try to hear the ring of the Chose of Lublin's clock." So I give everyone a bracha. Mirtz Hashem, this year, this Tisha B'Av, we should all be zocha. Not to be fasting on Tisha B'Av, but to be eating meat and to be drinking wine. And I promise you that's going to happen. How can I promise you? Because Tisha B'Av is on Shabbos this year. So every single one of you is going to eat meat and you're going to drink wine. In 1990, it was a big year for Geula. So someone came to Rishlo, it was during the Gulf War, 1991. So someone came to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. And they said, "Rebbe, what's going to be with the world?" So Rav Shlomo Zalman said, "I promise you this year you're going to eat meat and drink wine on Tisha B'Av." Tisha B'Av was on Shabbos that year. So of course it came true. But halavai, that should become the new minhag in Klal Yisrael. That we should only be zocha to good things. And we should have the attitude of the Chose of Lublin to hear the positive chime of the clock. To know we're a moment closer. And Amir Tzashem, if we could find that right perspective. If we could take the Moshe Rabbeinu approach. And not the Bilam HaRasha approach. Aver enu v'lo atah, you'll see it, but not yet. Then Amir Tzashem will be zocha to the Gula Shleva Be'er 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 Be'er